It's good to be home. Something I think about often is that someday there will be no separation between those who love God. If you open your Bible and turn to Hebrews chapter 11 and put your marker there, Hebrews chapter 11, we're going to be pretty much staying in that text this evening. We'll make some quick references to other books of the Bible. We'll get some context for what we're going to talk about, but Hebrews 11 really is going to be our outline. There are many self-professing Christians who, if not in their doctrine, at least in their practice, they would say that the concept of faith and the concept of belief are the same thing. And we often go to James chapter 2 and we point out that even the demons believe and that they tremble, but we wouldn't say that demons have faith. And then we would take them here to Hebrews chapter 11 and we would show them that faith doesn't just believe in God, but faith believes God. And so faith acts on God's word and follows Him. Those who have faith will trust Him. They will trust Him enough to seek Him and obey Him, or else they don't really have faith. And we would be correct in making those points, and those points need to be made. But I worry that in reacting to the false doctrine, the false gospel that these denominations believe and teach, that we might actually miss the major point that the Hebrew author is really trying to make in this chapter. The faith that is described and demonstrated in Hebrews 11 is not just an obedient faith. It is an enduring faith. And just like the faith of these Old Testament people that are talked about in this chapter, while we won't be saved by a faith that does not obey, we also will not be saved by a faith that only obeys when it is easy to obey. The letter to the Hebrews is written to Christians who have left their former lives in order to follow Christ. But we can read throughout the New Testament that they are facing intense persecution to abandon this faith. And the Hebrew author continually encourages them and warns his audience that they need to keep their faith or they will drift away, possibly even past the point of no return. And so before we dive into talking about developing an enduring faith like the people of Hebrews chapter 11, I want for us to think about the danger that the Hebrew author is addressing. He isn't especially concerned with people being deceived. He isn't really talking about people being fooled. He's talking about people giving up, and giving up when things get hard. And so if you leave your finger here in Hebrews 11 and you turn back to chapter 2 and verse 3, the author does not say, "How shall we escape if we reject so great a salvation and follow something else?" He says, "How shall we escape if we neglect it?" In chapter 3, he talks about those who had hard hearts in the wilderness. Rather than having hard hearts, he encourages his audience in verses 6 and 14. He says, "Hold fast the confidence, steadfast or firm to the end." In chapter 4, the promise of rest for those who endure. In chapter 5, Christ learned obedience. By what? By the things which he suffered. Chapter 6 and verse 12, "Don't become lazy, but imitate those who through faith and endurance inherit the promise." And so we see endurance established as a major point, and I would argue maybe even the major point of the book of Hebrews. In chapters 7 through 10, that helps us understand how we are able to endure, that Christ always lives to make intercession for us, that we have Him as our high priest, and that He is seated at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in the heavens, that He has, not with the blood of bulls and goats, but with His own blood, He has entered the most holy place once for all, obtaining redemption. And that through His one perfect sacrifice, it says, to those who eagerly wait for Him, He will appear a second time apart from sin and for salvation. And that leads us into chapter 10, where we are reminded that we have one another in order to help with this endurance. In chapter 10 and verse 23 beginning, it says, "Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for He who promised is faithful. And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another," that is, helping one another to endure until we see the day approaching. And so you see what Hebrews 11 does for us is it gives us some great examples of faith. But surrounding chapter 11 on either side, we have a context that gives us instruction on what to do with those examples, what we are supposed to learn and how they are supposed to apply to us. And so in chapter 11 and verse 1, we read, "Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the confidence of things not seen." The first thing that we should notice when we are reading Hebrews 11 is that word "now." That word "now," it functions the same as the word "therefore." It connects what we are about to read with the previous thought. And so what are we supposed to be thinking about when we read about these heroes of faith? Let's go back to chapter 10 and begin reading in verse 32. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 32, it says, "But recall the former days in which, after you were illuminated, you endured a great struggle with suffering. Partly while you were made a spectacle, both by reproaches and tribulations, partly while you became companions of those who were so treated, for you had compassion on me and my chains, and joyfully accepted the plundering of your goods, knowing that you have a better and enduring possession for yourselves in heaven. Therefore, do not cast away your confidence, which has great reward, for you have need of endurance, so that after you have done the will of God, you may receive the promise. For yet a little while, and he who is coming will come and will not tarry, but the just shall live by their faith. And if anyone draws back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those who draw back to destruction, but those who believe to the saving of the soul. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen." The Hebrew author says, remember the great struggle that you have already endured. You were made a spectacle by reproaches, by tribulations. You were made a spectacle by showing friendship to me while I was in chains. Your goods were plundered. In verse 36, he tells them, you still need that kind of endurance. That what got you through this experience, you still need that because there's more coming. Where does this endurance come from? In verse 34, he says, you have an enduring possession in heaven. They can't take that away from you. They can plunder your earthly goods, but they can't take away this enduring possession in heaven. In verse 36, it says, after you have done the will of God, you may receive the promise. We are supplied with endurance when we remember the promises of God. But notice when that promise will be received. It says, after you have endured. Verse 37 says it's going to be a little while. In other words, God requires His people to endure sufferings in obedience before they can receive His promises. That's exactly what we see from these examples in Hebrews chapter 11. Verse 1 tells us what to expect from these examples. He says that faith is the substance of things hoped for. That means they haven't been received yet. It's the substance of things hoped for, but not yet received. The promises of God that will come after we endure this life. And that faith is the confidence that we have in these promises. The purpose and the message of Hebrews 11 is that we need this same kind of faith. The Hebrew author has just said that his audience is in need of endurance, that difficult times are coming to test their faith. And the faith that trusts in God's unseen promises is the faith that is going to endure. That's the kind of faith that we need to have today. The majority of Hebrews 11 is about these people of the past. In verse 2, it says, "By this kind of faith, the men of old gained approval." And that language comes back at the end of our chapter. If you look ahead to verse 39, it says, "All these gained approval by their faith." And so these bookends tell us that we're primarily dealing with these men of old. But in verse 3, it says, "By faith, we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God." And in verse 40, on the other end of that bookend, it says, "God provided something better for us." And so there's something about this historical faith that carries over to the people of the first century that the letter is being written to, and by extension to us today. And so we have these bookends at the beginning and at the end of the chapter that point us to the people between them and include us, that they had the type of faith that we need in order to endure. So let's start looking at some of these examples of faith that are provided for us. The first The first examples that we see come from the patriarchs. And as we are looking at these examples, we need to ask ourselves, how do these examples apply to the point that the Hebrew writer is making about an enduring faith, and how could we develop endurance in our faith today? Verse 4 talks about Abel. And it says that by faith Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and through it, he being dead, still speaks. We know the story of Cain and Abel from Genesis chapter 4, how they each made sacrifices to God. But it says in Genesis chapter 4 and verse 4 that the Lord respected Abel and his sacrifice, but he did not respect Cain and his offering. And we know because of jealousy that Cain gave in to temptation that he should not have, and he murdered his brother. And usually when we read that story, I think our emphasis, or at least my mind, usually goes to the actions of Cain. But have you considered what Abel did to get murdered? Abel was murdered because he had done the right thing. Abel was murdered because of his faith. The Hebrew author comes right out of the gate with his first example of endurance being the first murder and the first martyr. It's interesting, the Greek word that we have translated martyr, anytime you come across that word, it literally means witness. And so it is said of Abel in Hebrews 11 that he obtained witness, and that in fact he is still witnessing because he being dead still speaks. The Christians that this letter is addressed to, they're in a situation where some of them need to be prepared to follow in the steps of righteous Abel. They need to be willing and have the ability and the endurance in their faith that they might need to die in order to be faithful to God under the persecution that they are going through. They need to be like Abel, whose endurance of faith allowed him to see the unseen and have confidence in the promises of God which had not yet been received. If you want a truly enduring faith, you look to Abel and you be like him. You develop a faith that looks beyond death to what God has promised, and you will endure. Well, then we read about Enoch in verse 5. Enoch, by faith, was taken away so that he did not see death, and he was not found because God had taken him. For before he was taken, he had this testimony, and he pleased God. We go from an example of someone who died because of his faith to an example of someone who never died because of his faith. What kind of endurance is necessary for someone who was not even allowed to see death? Well, in Genesis chapter 5, beginning in verse 21, we're told that Enoch lived for 65 years, and then he begot Methuselah. And after he begot Methuselah, it says that Enoch walked with God for 300 years and had sons and daughters, and that all the days of Enoch were 365 years. And he was not, for God took him. If you want to talk about endurance, how about the endurance that would be necessary to walk with God for 300 years? Abel made a sacrifice by faith, and he himself was sacrificed because of his faith. But Enoch made the daily sacrifice of denying himself and following the will of God for 3 or 4 of any of our lifetimes. If you want a faith that endures, look at Enoch. Make the little sacrifices every day to spend more time in study and prayer and meditation and fellowship with other Christians. Deny yourself and walk with God, and your faith will endure. About Noah, verse 7, says, by faith Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became an heir of righteousness, which is according to faith. How is Noah an example of enduring faith? Noah lived in a world that hated God. We're told in Genesis chapter 6 and verse 5 that the wickedness of the world was so great in the earth that every intent of the thoughts of their hearts were only evil continually. And so God decided that he was going to start over. He had created everything by separating the waters. He decided to put them right back where they came from and start again. He was going to put everything to death. But in verse 8 of Genesis 6, it says that Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Well, why did Noah find grace? Why of all people, Noah? What made him so special? Well, it wasn't because he was just like everybody else. Rather, something was different. The same thing that was said about Enoch in Genesis chapter 5 is said about Noah in Genesis chapter 6 and verse 9, that Noah walked with God. Surrounded by a culture that hated God, Noah spent many decades in faithful obedience building an ark, as Hebrews says, in preparation for the saving of his household. And all of this because of a warning of things not yet seen. Why did he do this? Because he was moved with godly fear. Fear of what? Well, God said there's going to be this great big flood, and it's going to rain so much that everything that has breath in its nostrils is going to die except for what is on this boat. You realize how ridiculous that would have sounded to someone who had never seen rain before. But in verse 18 of Genesis chapter 6, God simply says, I will establish my covenant with you. He says, this flood is coming, but if you endure for the next 75 years building this ark the way that I tell you to build it and living in this horrible world, I promise that you will see the new world that I will create. Noah had enduring faith because he had confidence in things that were promised but were yet unseen. If you want an enduring faith, you'd be like Noah. And you follow God's instructions in your life. Here in a world where many people hate God and are going to hate you, endure here and you will see the new heavens and the new earth that God has promised. But we cannot yet see. What about Abraham? I'm going to summarize a little bit about what Hebrews 11 has to say about Abraham. But it says, beginning in verse 8, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out from the place of which he would receive as an inheritance. But in verse 9, it says that he dwelt there in tents, as if he were a foreigner. In verse 10, we see that he was waiting for something that was more meaningful than just a physical homeland. And we can call to mind the promises that were made to Abraham in Genesis chapter 12, that God would provide Abraham with a homeland, that he would make him into a great nation, and that through him, all of the families of the earth would be blessed. But there was a major problem for Abraham in these promises, was that he had no heir. And all of these promises were contingent on Abraham having descendants. Sarah, Abraham's wife, was barren. And just to make things even more impossible by human means, God waited until she was 90 years old to provide a son for Abraham. You think that it took a faith of endurance or of patience to wait so long for God's promises for a son to be fulfilled? But what about when Abraham was then commanded to sacrifice his son of promise? In Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 17, it says, by faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it had been said, in Isaac your seed shall be called. Concluding that God was able to even to raise him up from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. Well, how did Abraham have the faith necessary to sacrifice his son? It was because God had promised, in Isaac your seed shall be called. Abraham was confident that God would fulfill his promise so that even if Isaac died, he would be resurrected in order that the promises made to him by God would be fulfilled. If you go back to Genesis chapter 22 and the story where this happens in verse 5, as Abraham and Isaac are about to trek up this mountain to the place where he is supposed to be sacrificed, Abraham turns around and he tells his servants, he says, stay here with the donkey. The lad and I will go yonder to worship, and we will return to you. He knew Isaac was coming back. You want a faith that endures? Look at Abraham. He had confidence that no matter what, God was going to fulfill his promises so that even if your physical body is destroyed, it will be raised again and made whole in order that God's promises be fulfilled. Verse 13 says that all of these died in faith. They all died with this confidence, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off. And we see in verse 15 that if they wanted to return to the land which they had been called out of, they had that option. But they didn't, because they had an enduring faith that looked forward to the promises of God and were confident in his ability and in his character to fulfill them. Then we read about Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. In verse 20 it says, by faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning the things to come. Even after the death of Abraham, the promises to his descendants had still not yet been fulfilled, but Isaac had an enduring faith, and he believed God's promises so that he looked forward to the fulfillment of those promises. And so in Genesis chapter 27, an elderly Isaac, who has still not received the promises that were made to his father, who is dead, blessed his sons according to those promises and looked forward to those young, yet unfulfilled promises that were given to his father. In verse 21, by faith Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of his sons, each of the sons of Joseph, and worshiped leaning on the top of his staff. And so here we have Abraham's grandson. He still has not received the promises, and he's blessing his grandchildren according to those same promises. You think that's a patient or an enduring faith? Verse 22, it says, by faith Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instructions concerning his bones. You go back to Genesis chapter 50 in verses 24 and 25, Joseph says to his brethren, he says, I am dying, but God will surely visit you, and he will bring you up out of this land to the land which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And then Joseph, he takes an oath from his brethren, and he says, when you go, when God visits you, you shall surely carry my bones up from here. Joseph is talking already about the Exodus before his people are even enslaved. And he's saying, don't forget me when that happens. Why? Because God promised. And so you see Jacob and Isaac and Joseph, all three are making some of the most major decisions of their life. And you notice that they are all dying when they make these decisions. And they do so based on these promises that they could not see and would not see in their lifetimes. You want a faith that endures? Develop a faith that has the foresight to plan beyond what you are doing tomorrow, beyond what you are doing next week, and start thinking in terms of planning for eternity. Before we leave this section, I just want for us to notice that from verse 8 through verse 22, we are talking about a genealogy. We're talking about a genealogy of faithfulness. That Abraham begot Isaac, Isaac begot Jacob, Jacob begot Joseph, Joseph begot Ephraim and Manasseh, and each one were faithful to the promises that were taught to them by their forefathers. You want a faith that transcends your generations? Well, don't just educate your children about the promises of God, but do like these faithful men and help them understand that their blessings and their inheritance are contingent on those same promises. This promise is more important than anything else in your life. More important than your sports career. More important than your job. More important than your relationship status. More important than your life. And it's not optional. This is your duty to endure as your fathers have endured before you. That brings us to the Mosaic examples. Moses, in verse 23, by faith, when he was born, he was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw that he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king's command. You remember at the time of Moses' birth, the Egyptian Pharaoh was intimidated by the people of God because there were just so many of them. And so he commanded that all of the midwives kill the male children in order to control the population. And Moses' parents and the Hebrew midwives, they showed that they were not afraid of a wicked king of this earth, though the threat he posed was very real. They could see that they were enslaved, their children were being murdered by the thousands, but they chose rather to show fear towards God who they could not see, rather than heed the king that they could see with their eyes. In verse 24, it says, by faith Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasuries of Egypt, for he looked to the reward. Moses had the choice of associating with the world and being comfortable, or associating with God's people and being persecuted. His faith was able to endure persecution because, in verse 26, he looked to the reward. The promise of God that he wasn't enjoying at the time, but he knew he would be worth more, far more, than anything that Egypt had to offer. I want you to notice that Moses' faith led him into association with the people of God. This association with God's people was the evidence of Moses' faith. And I would contend, based on the context of what it says in Hebrews 10, 23 through 25, that it also contributed to the endurance of Moses' faith. There are members of the Lord's church today who have trouble associating with God's people when it is inconvenient for them, when their schedule gets too busy, whatever else. And I'll be honest, those people frustrate me. They frustrate me when I read about the saints of Hebrews 11 and what they had to endure in order to associate with God's people. What do you think will happen to people who don't associate with God's people when it's inconvenient for them? When persecution comes, their faith won't endure. In verse 27, it says, "By faith Moses forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible." Just like his parents, just like his midwives, Moses had the enduring faith to fear the unseen and unreceived instead of the physical king right in front of him. In verse 28, "By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he who destroyed the firstborn should touch them." You know what sounds crazy without faith? A destroyer is coming. Here, sprinkle some blood from this lamb on your door and you'll be okay. But Moses trusted, and through faith in the unseen and unreceived, he endured. When we talk about Israel in general, in verse 29, "By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, whereas the Egyptians, attempting to do so, were drowned." You remember the Israelites' position in the Exodus when they get to the Red Sea. They get to this giant, insurmountable obstacle that is in front of them, blocking their path. And then they turn and they look behind them and they see the armies of Egypt, all of Pharaoh's horses and all of his chariots, and a people that had terrified them and tormented them and enslaved them for their whole lives. You might remember what they said to Moses. They said, "What? Were there not enough graves in Egypt that you had to take us outside of city limits to kill us?" That's a paraphrase. And Moses' instruction to them in Exodus 14, he says, "Don't be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish before you today. For these Egyptians who you see today, you shall see no more forever." There's an army of horses and chariots charging at you. And your instructions are stand still, be quiet, and watch. But despite the army they see behind them and the Red Sea that is in front of them, they trusted in God's unseen and yet unreceived promise. And they endured. You want a faith that endures? Prepare yourself to be willing to wait on the Lord to provide your exodus when you don't see a way out. In verse 30, it says, "By faith the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encircled for 7 days." Without faith, those appear to be some pretty ridiculous military tactics. You're going to battle, the general inclination is that you're going to hit some stuff and you're going to be really loud to try to intimidate the enemy. But God's instructions through Joshua are to walk around the city walls for once a day for 6 days and then 7 times on the 7th day, and they're to be completely silent until the final time on the final day, and Joshua would instruct them to shout and the priests would blow their trumpets and they are told that the walls will come tumbling down. Imagine the faith that would be necessary for every single man in that army to silently walk behind their commander until he tells them to shout and they believe that that is going to lead them to victory. But it did. The men of Israel hoped in the unseen and had confidence in the promise unreceived, and the walls came tumbling down. If God had given an instruction to lay siege to the city and to build ladders and a battering ram and some catapults to try to penetrate the walls, well, then people might get the wrong idea and think that this was really all their doing, that they had achieved this victory on their own. There's a lesson behind the method by which God defeated Jericho. That lesson is that victory was not accomplished by military strength, but purely by their strength of faith. If you want a faith that endures, walk silently behind your commander and trust him to lead you to victory. What about Rahab? Rahab in verse 31 says, "By faith the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe, when she had received the spies with peace. You remember Rahab was a citizen of Jericho, but she had the opportunity to be a good patriot and turn in these spies, and instead she hid them and she protected them, which allowed Israel a greater opportunity to execute their battle plan. Rahab had a faith that had heard of God's people and had heard of Israel's God. And we know that faith comes by hearing. Rahab told the spies that she had heard about the Red Sea crossing, and she had heard about Israel's defeat of the Amorites. And it was for that reason that she cast her lot with the people of God and betrayed her own people. But notice what Hebrews says about Rahab's faith. It says that her faith was demonstrated, and she was saved because rather than remaining connected to the disobedient people of Jericho, she allied herself with the faithful children of God. Rahab committed treason against her people for the salvation of herself and the salvation of her household. If you want a faith that endures, don't develop allegiance to your country. Develop allegiance to your God. But Gideon, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah, the judges. Verse 32 in the first part, it says, time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah. They think about the endurance that would be necessary in order to live righteously during the time of the judges. And really, all of the heroes of the book of Judges emerged from times of great persecution, and all of that persecution was brought about by a sinful culture. And so really there would be a great deal of endurance necessary for them before their stories are ever told. Gideon became a leader of Israel in a time when the Midianites far outnumbered the Israelites. The Israelites spent their lives in constant fear living in caves in the mountains. Barak was a leader during a time which we are told not a shield or a spear was found among 40,000 men of Israel. There was no true masculinity in Israel at his time. There was no courage to be found. Samson endured betrayal from a woman he loved. He was tortured. He was ridiculed by the Philistines. Ultimately, he sacrificed his own life in order to win a victory for God. Jephthah was ostracized from his own family and from his community. He was faced as an enemy by his own brethren. He had to sacrifice his own daughter in order to receive the promises of God. And really, all of these men were not so heroic in their character, if you study it closely. But because of their understanding of God's promises, they were still able to accomplish heroic deeds. The people that this letter is written to lived in a time where they could find themselves in situations just like these, where they might be the only ones in their communities following God. That they might even have other Christians turn them in to the persecuting authorities. They might face martyrdom. They might lose their children. When those things happen, are they going to remain faithful to God, or are they going to allow those hard times to destroy their faith? How did these men and women have the courage to do the right thing when no one else would? To go to war against incredible odds, to suffer betrayal, to suffer torture and martyrdom, and to not even allow their own children to interrupt their relationship with God. It was because they looked beyond the moment to blessings yet unseen and promises yet unreceived. Second half of verse 32 talks about David and Samuel and the prophets. Thinking about David and his enduring faith, there's a lot of directions that we could go with this. We could talk about his battle with Goliath when everyone else in Israel was just shaking in their boots, and here comes this young shepherd boy. He goes out and he defeats this giant champion of the Philistines. We could talk about Saul throwing a spear at David as he's playing music for him. And I love that the way the scriptures say it is just so nonchalant. Twice. That happened twice. There's a little detail. I do not think that I would have picked the harp back up. Or we could talk about how Saul pursued him like a fugitive. How could David have the courage to do what he did? It was because God had already promised him that eventually he was going to be the king. All of those things are great to consider in the life of David, his enduring faith. But I want to consider the passage in 2 Samuel chapter 12 after David's sin with Bathsheba, after Nathan confronts him about his sin, and David learns that a consequence of his sin is that his son with Bathsheba will die. In 2 Samuel chapter 12, and verse 16, it says that David therefore pleaded with God for the child, and that David fasted, and that he went in and he lay on the ground all night, that the elders of his house arose and he went to him, and they tried to raise him up from the ground, but he would not, and he would not eat food with them. And then after all of this, David's infant son died anyway. And even understanding that this was a consequence of sin, that's enough to destroy the faith of most people. But when David heard the news in verse 20, it says that he arose from the ground, that he washed and anointed himself, that he changed his clothes, and he went into the house of the Lord and worshiped. Why did David's faith endure at the loss of his child? It's because of what he said in verse 23. I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me. David looked beyond what he could see with his eyes, and he saw a reunion with his son, a promise not yet received. If you want a faith that endures the loss of faithful loved ones, look beyond death to the promised resurrection. What about Samuel? Think about what Israel said to Samuel, 1 Samuel chapter 8. He said, give us a king to judge us like all the other nations. And the Lord said, Samuel, they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me that I should not reign over them. And Samuel lived in a time when men rejected the authority of God in favor of a human king. That surely never happens today. Are there Christians today who seem to have the attitude that they want some politician to judge us and go out before us and fight our battles for us like Israel wanted for their king? We aren't there yet, but we might be approaching the situation of the audience in this Hebrew letter, that many in our culture, many in their culture, had made politicians their gods to the point that if you didn't toe the party line, that meant that you were going to die. If we want an enduring faith, we need to look to God to be our invisible champion and trust His promises yet unreceived when the rest of the world is looking to donkeys and elephants to answer their promises, which will never be fulfilled. And what about the prophets? Israel had such a history of killing the prophets that God sent to her that Jesus called Jerusalem, in Matthew 23, the city who kills the prophets. It's not really what you want your city to be known for. Peter tells us in 1 Peter chapter 1 that the prophets didn't even completely understand their own prophecies. He says, to them it was revealed that to us and not to them, they were ministering the things which have now been reported. Even not understanding the messages that they preached, they still had confidence and a complete trust in the Word of God to lay down their lives proclaiming it. You want a faith that endures, this is the level of trust that we must place in the Scriptures. Verses 33 and 34 of Hebrews 11 tells us that, it says of this last class of people, that they, through faith, subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens, all because their faith saw the unseen, and they had confidence in the promises of God. And now we get to the others. And to me, this is the most encouraging section, because you don't have to be an Abraham or a Moses to be faithful. Those examples that seem to me to be unattainable, these people who are described in the following verses are everyday saints and followers of God. They were not leaders of Israel. They are just people with faith. They were the others. And God forbid that we are ever in a dire situation like these people were, like all of these everyday heroes. But we can be like them if we suffer like them. And we can endure like they did if we develop our faith to look beyond our present lives into the future that God has promised us. In verse 35, it says that others were tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. Others had trials of mockings and scourgings and of chains and of imprisonment, and they were stoned and they were sawn in two and they were tempted. They were slain with the sword. They wandered in sheepskins and in goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and in dens and in caves of the earth. And not just because they believed in God, and not just because they followed God when it was convenient for them, or when it was easy, or when it wasn't football season, or when they didn't feel like assembling with the saints, but because they had a faith that endured and obeyed even under penalty of unimaginable death, discomfort, and loss. All of these, having obtained approval through their faith, did not receive the promise. God having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. And we may understand these examples are all about enduring faith, and that we need to be like them. That we need to be not like those who draw back to destruction, but of those who believe in the saving of the soul. But what do we do with all these examples now? Well, in Hebrews chapter 12, in verse 1, it says, therefore, here's your lesson. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. We need to realize that these people are real people who really endured, most of them, much worse things than we will ever even imagine. But they finished their race anyway. They're like the retired athletes that are on that are still coaching us from the sideline. They are surrounding us. They are cheering us on, encouraging us to endure through their testimony. But it is necessary that we lay aside every weight and sin, that we might have a faith that endures like the faith of our fathers. Notice the distinction that is made there. That we are not just to lay aside sin, but if we want an enduring faith, we need to lay aside every weight. Even things that are not necessarily sinful, but those things that can trip us up when push comes to shove, when things get hard. And so I'm going to tell you that if you're having trouble making it to Bible studies and worship assemblies and spending time with your brethren because of your schedule, then you need to clear your schedule. It's not so important that you should have a faith that does not endure, that does not last because of that, or that your children fall away because you demonstrate poor priorities. If you have trouble treating people in a Christ-like way who are on the other side of the political aisle, if you get caught up placing your confidence and your trust in men instead of wholly leaning on God, then it's time to stop watching the news and delete Facebook. It's not worth it. If you spend too much time watching TV or doom-scrolling through your social media and you aren't devoting time to study or to prayer or building relationships with your family, or if you have killed your attention span to the point where you can't pay attention to a 45-minute sermon, you need to delete TikTok. Get a flip phone. They still sell them. Every single person in Hebrews 11 whose faith endured so that they could see the promises of God would tell you that any sacrifice that you make in this life would be worth it. And remember that this cloud of witnesses is not limited to those who are named, but it also includes those nameless saints who ran with endurance. And it's not even limited to biblical times. But that cloud of witnesses continues to grow every day. In the words of the Hebrew writer, time would fail me to tell you about my cloud of witnesses, about Grandpa and Uncle Jim and Ray Basford, Pat, Elizabeth James, Springfield, Illinois. She became a Christian late in life who had lung cancer. She couldn't walk more than 10 steps before she had to stop and catch her breath. Tucker and I literally had to carry her up the stairs every Sunday because we didn't have a ramp. She didn't consider it a waste of her breath to sing praises to God and say amen from the back pew where we laid her down. Or the faithful saints at downtown. Sandra Shell. Gerald Walsh. Owen Griggs. Alex Corder. Bob Walsh. Sandra Montgomery. Mary Lou Lewis. Gary Fletcher. And there are many more of whom this world was not worthy. But we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, of people who endured, whose faith endured, and now they are cheering us on so that our faith might endure. And there among them is the chief witness, Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. No other has suffered so undeservedly and yet with such endurance as our Savior. He could have stopped his pain and destroyed his enemies at any moment, but instead he considered what laid before him worth the price of his sacrifice. If you notice how the text says Jesus was able to endure, it says, for the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross. Even Jesus endured by seeing what was ahead and having confidence in the yet unreceived. Now, we may not, we may never face the persecution and difficulty as severe as that which was faced by the audience of this Hebrew letter. But like them in verse 4, it says, we have not yet resisted to bloodshed, striving against sin. The word yet there, I think, is pretty important. The time to prepare ourselves to endure is not when the trials come, but now. You look to the saints of old who by their faith gained approval. Look to the cloud of witnesses of saints gone before us. Most of all, look to Jesus as our examples. But most importantly, look at what all of these examples point us to. They point us to the promises of God, of a home in heaven with Him where there will be no more suffering. There will be no more temptation. There will be no need for endurance because we will finally be at rest. If you're a Christian, those promises apply to you through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. Your endurance has a purpose. If you are not a Christian, your life and your suffering are lacking in meaning and fulfillment. The promise of rest does not apply to you, but you can change that by committing to Jesus right now in the waters of baptism. If you are a Christian, but your faith is struggling to endure, you have this cloud of witnesses to support you, but you also have your brethren here to help you through your tough times. We're running this race together. Let us help you lay aside those weights that are dragging you down. Whatever your needs, please make them known while we stand and sing.